This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines: Iranians gather in the southeastern city of Kerman to pay tribute to General Soleimani. A human rights group says more than 3,000 Yemenis were killed or injured in airstrikes carried out by the Saudi-led coalition. And Syria strongly condemns the latest Israeli missile strikes on its territory. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisum Shahmadi, and these are top stories of this hour. People have gathered in the southeastern city of Kerman in Iran to pay tribute to the late military commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. The gathering was held on the eve of the third anniversary of the assassination of General Soleimani. Rallies and commemorative ceremonies for the anti-terror icon are scheduled nationwide. On Tuesday, General Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Mohandes, deputy head of Iraq's Popular Mobilization Forces, were killed in a U.S. drone strike near Baghdad International Airport in 2020. A U.N. special rapporteur on the extrajudicial killing condemned the strike as a violation of international law. Iran called Soleimani's assassination state terrorism and vowed to take revenge on the masterminds and perpetrators of the drone strike. Meanwhile, Iran's foreign ministry says the U.S. government bears definite responsibility for the killing of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, and it will seriously work to bring those involved to justice. The ministry's spokesman made the comments in a statement to third anniversary of the assassination of the Iranian commander. Nasser Kanani says the general played a key role in Iran's efforts to protect peace in the region and also in the world, including its battle against terrorist groups. The spokesman described the general as an anti-terror hero. Kanani said that the assassination was an act of terror by the U.S. and goes beyond the claims that it has to fight terrorism. And Tehran has held a conference dubbed Qasem Soleimani and the New World Order. Saman Kujuri reports.
Tehran has hosted a conference titled General Qasem Soleimani and the New World Order. Senior military and state officials attended the conference to discuss the role of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani in the fight against terrorism and in the creation of a new world order. Addressing the conference, Major General Yahya Rahim Safavi, the top military advisor to leader of the Islamic Revolution Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, said the U.S. has made many mistakes during the past decades, one of the gravest of which was the assassination of General Soleimani in January 2020.
The martyrdom of General Qasem Soleimani triggered the creation of a new world order by the resistance front in the face of arrogant powers. The axis of arrogance led by the U.S. is projecting power through militaristic approaches as well as hybrid and media warfare, while the resistance front, spearheaded by Iran and Ayatollah Khamenei, has adopted the cultural influence strategy by using soft power and standing up to the arrogant axis.
General Soleimani was the commander of the Quds Force of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, IRGC. The United States assassinated him along with Abu Mehdi al-Mohandas, the deputy commander of Iraq's anti-terror popular mobilization units, and their companions in a drone strike near Baghdad International Airport on January 3, 2020.
General Qasem Soleimani was active on all fronts for nearly 30 years without interruption and without hesitation. His personality was outstanding not only in terms of decimating Daesh in Syria and Iraq, but also in sending out positive vibes and displaying courage to everyone. He was a symbol of international resistance who redefined the rules of leadership.
General Soleimani is well known for dislodging Daesh terrorists in Iraq back in 2017. He also spearheaded major operations in Syria that resulted in liberating key areas from Daesh control. Observers say by assassinating General Soleimani, the U.S. tried to resurrect the terrorists. However, they call it a miscalculation, which backfired on Washington, triggering the beginning of its exit from the region.
Although the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani put an end to his life, his legacy will continue forever, and he will remain as a role model for all resistance and anti-terrorism carriers. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
A Yemeni rights group says more than 3,000 civilians were killed or injured in airstrikes launched by the Saudi-led coalition this year. The Eye of Humanity Center for Rights and Development issued a report. It said over 100 children lost their lives and 350 were injured in 2022. As for the damage to Yemen's infrastructure, nearly 15,000 homes of over 100 mosques and a dozen hospitals were destroyed by the Saudi warplanes. Saudi Arabia, along with some of its regional allies, launched a war in Yemen in 2015. The objective was to reinstate a friendly, Riyadh-friendly regime there. Syria condemns Israel's recent missile strike on Damascus Airport, calling it a violation of international law. The Syrian Foreign Ministry called on the UN Security Council to condemn the aggression immediately and punish the Israeli regime. The ministry added that the attack in the early hours of Monday left too many personnel that were killed, two others wounded. The spike put airport briefly out of service over material damage. This is the second time in less than 7 months that Damascus is holding international airports, which has been targeted by Iranian sharks. The regime frequently carries out airstrikes in Syria, which Damascus says are aimed at propping terrorists. Pakistan has reiterated its resolve to deal decisively with Taliban militants. The country's civil and military leadership reaffirmed their determination to take action against those who want to harm the country's peace and economic stability. Nasser Kazmi reports.
The recent upsurge in terrorist attacks on security forces as well as citizens across Pakistan has forced Pakistan's civilian and military leadership to join their hands to stop the ongoing violence. The country's National Security Committee, a body of top civil and military leaders, has met for a second time in less than a week in Islamabad and agreed to take stern actions against those trying to sabotage the peace and stability of the country. The committee announced that no country will be allowed to provide a safe haven for the terrorists, and Pakistan reserves the right to take measures to protect its people. Pakistani lawmakers support the decision taken by the committee, saying terrorists should be dealt with full force.
Country's economic situation is worsening day by day due to the militants' activities. These terrorists are enemies of Pakistan. The entire nation is united against terrorism. Those who challenge Pakistan will get a strong response.
Analysts say that the country has witnessed a record 50% increase in terrorist attacks last year, following the return of Afghanistan's Taliban to power.
This is really a source of great worry for Pakistan and the security forces of Pakistan. Pakistan was expecting that after the Taliban takeover in Kabul, the terrorism will go down and this tide of terrorism will subside. But that has not happened, unfortunately.
Pakistan is facing a resurgence of violent attacks in recent months. Most of the attacks have so far been claimed by Tehrik-e-Taliban, an armed group also known as Pakistani Taliban, due to its ideological affiliation with the Afghan Taliban. Besides saving the fragile economy of Pakistan, experts believe the government has to devise a comprehensive strategy to counter the security threats as the country is heading into an election year. Nasser Kazmi in Islamabad.
Metro and bus traffic in the Tunisian capital has ground to halt due to a strike by state transport employees. Hundreds of staff from the company walked off and demonstrated outside the prime minister's office. The protesters are demanding payment of money owed by the country. According to the company officials, the strike froze the money majority transport services in the capital used. The travel chaos provoked an angry response from the people sitting out in the cold. The North African nation is struggling with debuts of more than 100% of its GDP. Tunisia is seeking nearly $2 billion in loans from the International Monetary Fund in exchange for unpopular, uncertain measures. Britain is struggling with a crippling economic crisis, which prompted different sectors to walk out.
The UK's National Health Service, NHS, appears to be in a serious crisis. A senior official says up to 500 patients are dying every week because of delays to emergency care.
We cannot continue like this. It is unsafe and it's undignified. What we're seeing now is, in terms of these long waits, is being associated with increased mortality. And we think somewhere between 300 to 500 people are dying as a consequence of delays and problems with urgent and emergency care each week.
The Boyle cited bed shortages as the root of the problem, leading to hundreds of unnecessary deaths. He said that December was the worst ever month for hospital bed occupancy and emergency care delays. The dire state of the NHS is blamed on a combination of factors, such as rising COVID and flu cases, pandemic backlogs, and staff shortages. Pressure on the health service comes amid a fresh wave of strikes by nurses, paramedics, and ambulance drivers. They demand higher pay in line with soaring inflation in the country. Now, time now to see what's going on. So let's get some more accurate information and also insight. So let me invite to Robert Carter, our correspondent in London. Also with me is Rodney Shakespeare, who's professor of economics and political commentator in London. So, Rob, how serious is the problem? And definitely, this is not a, it shouldn't have dragged into the new year. It's not a proper new year gift, is it?
No, absolutely not. And I can say from personal experience that COVID is certainly rearing its ugly head again in these colder months. I believe that myself and also my entire family came down with possibly a new variant of COVID, which is going around now, at least according to fears from the government. We've been sick over the season. A lot of other people have been sick too, it seems. And the NHS, which is already under major strain from a lack of support from the government, from various other issues, crises which are ongoing, such as a staffing shortage and things of that nature, There's been a shortage of bed spaces, long queues at the A&E services, accident and emergency, so people just haven't been able to get the care that they need, and it's cost lives. That's what these statistics are suggesting. The government has issued generic statements like they understand the pressures that the NHS is under and are with them, basically, in spirit, it seems. But ultimately, 2023, there could be another kind of wave of COVID fear over a new variant which has been going around now. And I think that there's a rise in cases in the US which are quite concerning for many onlookers. And as you can see from statistics here, people are visiting the hospitals more now, coming down with flus and COVID-related sickness possibly as well. China, of course, there are measures being brought in. The government here are announcing that they're going to start implementing tests on anyone coming from China as well, in a move similar to what we're seeing over in America as well, a kind of focus on dealing with this threat coming from China, if you like. But ultimately, the UK's national health is in a very bad situation, and it's going to be one of the main themes going forward into this year. Is the NHS getting the support it needs? Strike action has already been taking place. You can expect more of that going forward into the year.
Okay. Now, Professor Shakespeare, what do you expect, given the circumstances, the strike actions going on, and the economic situation woes that the UK is facing, and what has happened in the aftermath of the Brexit? So what is it that you expect to happen? Do you expect things to improve? Are we going to witness changes for better or for worse in the year 2023?
It's not going to get better. Because, you see, at the core of this, at least at half the core of the inflation, is the one thing they're not mentioning, which is the effect of sanctions on Russia and the effect on world food prices, in the inflation in general. Half of that is due to the insistence that the West has a right to move its atomic missiles right up against Russia. In 1963, America wouldn't tolerate Russian missiles right up against America in Cuba. Mm-hmm. Here we are today, 60 years later, doing this. And no one is discussing this. So you see, to your question is, the situation is going to get worse. They are not addressing the key factor, which is the eastward movement of NATO towards the east, and the killing of Russian-speaking Ukrainians, which precipitated the Ukrainian crisis. And the inflation there is not being addressed and cannot be addressed by their policy. Therefore, it's going to be more strikes. And eventually, I suppose, they will probably just start printing money and making the worst thing even worse. They could try raising interest rates to stop the inflation, but that will smash the economy. They are caught in an impossible bind, which is of their own making, and they are not doing the obvious thing, which is to cut half of that inflation, at least, by stopping the eastward movement of NATO towards the east.
Okay, thank you so much for that. Robert Carter, our correspondent, and Rodney Shakespeare, professor of economics and political commentator in London, with their insight and contribution.
That brings us to the end of this edition of World News.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
in the limelight.
The Biden administration is planning to use pandemic-era restrictions to expel many Cuban, Nicaraguan, and Haitian migrants. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of Truthout wrote in this regard, the new rules will model the policy used for Venezuelan asylum seekers, which advocates have denounced as inhumane. Biden administration lawyers fight to end a cruel anti-immigrant policy that has been used millions of times to expel asylum seekers. The U.S. administration officials are seeking to once again expand the policy, this time to ramp up expulsions of asylum seekers from Cuba, Nicaragua, and Haiti. According to Reuters, officials say that the administration is planning to implement new rules for the asylum seekers under Title 42 modeling the guidelines on the administration's expansion of the policy for Venezuelans. Immigration advocates have denounced the policy against Venezuelan asylum seekers as inhumane. The Department of Homeland Security of the U.S. has used the policy to expel thousands of Venezuelans, forcing them to endure dangerous conditions in Mexico, where they faced threats of violence and kidnapping, along with mounting unrest at the border that has only been exacerbated by Title 42. Denying asylum seekers across to protections in this way is a flagrant violation of U.S. refugee laws, Human Rights First wrote in December on its report on Title 42. Advocates have also decried the uneven application of the immigration and asylum bans on people from countries like Venezuela as a show of the racism behind such policies. Officials have claimed that the policy against Venezuelans is modeled after the government's policy to welcome other refugees, but the National Immigrant Justice Center has pointed out that the policy for the other refugees is welcoming of those escaping conflict, while the policy for Venezuelans is expressly punitive and is supposed to act as a deterrent. Officials have also made it extremely difficult for Venezuelans to apply for entry into the U.S. and have placed a limit on the number of refugees who are allowed to enter, but have not placed similar restrictions in other refugees from other countries. Immigration advocates are concerned that the new rules would have similar effects on Cubans, Nicaraguans, and Haitians, and have heavily criticized Biden for the expansion. The Biden administration expansion of Title 42 to Venezuelans is no model, said Eleanor Acer, Refugee Protection Director for Human Rights First. Biden officials should instead take all the steps to end Title 42, not expand it to additional nationalities, she went on. Enough is enough. Title 42 expulsions must end, not expand. Asylum Rights Coalition Welcome with Dignity wrote on Twitter, adding, POTUS should be ashamed. Instead of upholding the legal right to seek asylum, he continues Trump's attacks on asylum seekers. But the policy may not be going away anytime soon. The Supreme Court ruled recently that it will stay in place until at least February, when the High Court will formally consider the case blocking a federal judge's decision to strike down the policy in November. Though the Biden administration has been attempting to end Title 42 in court, it is still enforcing inhumane anti-immigrant policies, fighting elsewhere to dismiss families' lawsuits, over the cruel family separation policy at the southern border and continuing to detain immigrants in prisons. According to Politico, since March 2020, when the COVID pandemic took hold across the U.S., the Title 42 order has allowed border agents to immediately expel migrants who cross the southern border on public health grounds. But earlier this year, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the agency that formally issues the directive, determined it was no longer necessary, noting that COVID cases were far lower than the counts in 2020. Joe Biden has also declared that the pandemic is over. The court's ruling marks yet another chapter in the Biden administration's rocky journey in resolving and ending Trump-era immigration policies. Even as administration officials projected preparedness for the end of Title 42, the situation at the southern border has become a political headache for the White House, with Republicans routinely attacking the administration for failing to curb immigration and moderate Democrats echoing those concerns. Immigration reform advocates decried the court's ruling. The American Civil Liberties Union Lee Gellerant, the lead attorney in the Title 42 case, vowed to continue to challenge this policy that has caused so much harm to asylum seekers and cannot plausibly be justified any longer as a public health measure.
This is The Teacher, a radio documentary on the life of prominent martyrs of Islam.
کمتر وقتی است که من به یاد جناب آقای قاسم سلیمانی باشم و دعا نکنم.
Most of the time in my prayers, I remember General Qasem Soleimani. He was very dear to me. We as the soldiers of Islam have to look at great role models in our lives.
Although our hearts have been set on fire, and although we are mourning this great loss, we know that martyrdom in the way of Allah was your biggest wish.
Today's a special story, the life and character of Shahid General Haj Qasem Soleimani. Dear listeners, as most of you know, General Shahid Haj Qasem Soleimani, who was the commander of the Quds Force of IRGC, played a key role in the developments of West Asia, especially in fighting the Takfiri West-backed terrorists as well as the Zionist regime of Israel. Shortly before his martyrdom, Shahid Soleimani, in a documentary explained in full detail how he and the Quds Force helped Hezbollah of Lebanon to defeat the Israeli regime in the 2006 33-day war between Hezbollah and the Israeli regime. He said that the Israelis wanted to launch a surprise attack against Hezbollah in order to put an end to it. They were self-assured that nearly 200,000 American armed forces could back them up and do not let Hezbollah attack them. As a matter of fact, the Israelis wanted to completely change the demographic of Lebanon. Shahid General Haj Qasem Soleimani said that the goal of Israel was to occupy Lebanon once again and completely destroy Hezbollah under the pretext of saving two of its captives. However, thanks to the intelligence operations of the Quds Force and the vigilance of Hezbollah, they were able to predict this attack of the Israelis, and Hezbollah was fully prepared to defend itself and its country, Lebanon. And now Ayatollah Javadi Amuli talks about the personality of Shahid Qasem Soleimani.
کمتر وقتی است که من به یاد جناب آقای قاسم سلیمانی باشم و دعا نکنم. اما خیلی به شما عزیزه.
همه ما وامدار شهادت و مجاهدت این برادر عزیز.
Most of the time in my prayers I remember General Qasem Soleimani. He was very dear to me. We are all indebted to this martyred brother of ours, Shahid General Qasem Soleimani. Last year, he came to the city of Qom to visit the religious authorities here. He had a meeting with me, too. When our meeting was finished and the other people left the room, he asked me to do something for him. He took a piece of cloth out of his pocket and said, "This is a piece of my shroud. Would you sign it for me and testify that I was a faithful person?" I said, "I am not qualified enough to testify this for you. Who am I to do so?" Now he asked me to testify for himself, who was a righteous person. He served his whole life for the cause of Islam. He safeguarded us. He protected us against the enemies. He saved our faces and families. He protected our religion, our Islamic system. He served Imam Khomeini and our current leader. Finally, I accepted and signed his shroud.
گفتیم هو شاهد خدایا تو شاهدی این عزیز ما
کارگزار. I wrote on that piece of cloth هو شاهد, which means, O Allah, I testify that this dear man has served you his whole life. And now you can see that by being martyred on the path of Allah and Islam, he is now in the presence of Allah, and he will be resurrected with the prophets of Allah, the Ahlul Bayt, and the martyrs of Karbala, especially Imam al-Husayn.
Oh,
Welcome back, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. You're listening to the program, The Teacher. Shahid General Haj Qasem Soleimani disclosed many secrets about the 33-day war between Hezbollah and the Israeli regime. He said that Shahid Emad Mughniya was an extremely influential figure in Hezbollah's victory against the Israelis. One of the amazing things that Shahid Emad Mughniya did was that he was able to target Israeli Hummers in Israeli soil and take the ones in it captive. In this way, he was able to capture many Israelis and bring them to Lebanon. Shahid Soleimani went on to say that Shahid Mughniya was careful that the ones inside the vehicles would not die, but rather only get wounded so that they could take them captive. Shahid Haj Qasem Soleimani compared Shahid Mughniya to Malik al-Ashtar after he was martyred. He said that we had the same feeling as Imam Ali did when Malik al-Ashtar was martyred. Shahid Qasem Soleimani praised Hezbollah as a very prudent and powerful force that before conducting any operation, they would make the necessary preparements. For example, when they took Israelis captive, they were fully prepared for the Israelis' response. This was one of the keys to the victory of Hezbollah. This is the voice of Shahid Qasem Soleimani, along with the English translation of his words.
ولی ما در زندگی پاسداری خودمون باید به الگوهای بزرگ نگاه کنیم.
We as the soldiers of Islam have to look at great role models in our lives. Our life will end one day, whether we are in the war fronts or our houses. This will come fast. Even if we live our whole life in the best hotel, or even we are the head of the world, we will die one day. Therefore, selecting the right path in our life is very important.
Welcome back, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. You're listening to the program, The Teacher. Shahid Haj Qasem Soleimani, in a documentary, spoke about his role and presence in the 33-day war between Hezbollah and Israel. He said he was in Syria and was unable to cross the Syria-Lebanon borders as it was constantly under aerial attack. However, Shahid Mughniya knew a way which was safe. Therefore, he went to Syria and took Shahid Soleimani to Lebanon from that secret passageway. Haj Qasem made a report to the Supreme Leader. The situation was critical in Lebanon. Buildings were being leveled by the Israeli attacks. There were villages that were entirely occupied by Shias and were completely separate from Christian and Sunni villages. Therefore, the Israelis freely attacked those villages and brutally killed many innocent people. Nevertheless, the Supreme Leader of Iran assured Haj Qasem and all the members of Hezbollah and Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah that you will definitely achieve victory as you are in the path of truth. Then, the Supreme Leader told them to recite the supplication of Joshan Saghir, which means the supplication of the lesser armor. Ultimately, thanks to Hezbollah's strong faith in God and the Ahlul Bayt, at night, while the Israeli forces were conducting a heliborne operation, one of the Hezbollah commanders fired a rocket that landed on the helicopter and killed all the Israelis in that helicopter. The Israelis thought Hezbollah had acquired sophisticated homing missiles. Therefore, they quickly ended the war and demanded ceasefire. If it weren't for the well-calculated plans of the Quds Force of IRGC and Shahid Haj Qasem Soleimani, Hezbollah wouldn't have achieved such a victory. Haj Qasem Soleimani was martyred on January 3, 2020 by the terrorist Zionist regime of America. May Allah bless Shahid Soleimani and further elevate his high ranks. Now we invite you to listen to Sister Zainab talking about Shahid General Qasem Soleimani.
I saw nothing but beauty. This is the famous sentence of Lady Zainab after the tragedy of Karbala. After witnessing all the men of her family, her sons, her brothers and his loyal companions being brutally killed in the way of Allah, Lady Zainab said, "I saw nothing but beauty." And today, General Soleimani, we saw nothing but beauty. You lived such a beautiful life and gave your life in the way of Allah so beautifully. You were martyred in the way of Allah by the hands of the Yazid of our time. You spent many years safeguarding the shrine of Lady Zainab in Syria, and if it weren't for your braveries and sacrifices, the enemy would have demolished Lady Zainab's shrine as soon as it could. If it weren't for your braveries and sacrifices, we would be fighting ISIS inside the cities of Iran today. You are a hero for all Iranians and Muslim youth all over the world. Although our hearts have been set on fire, and although we are mourning this great loss, we know that martyrdom in the way of Allah was your biggest wish. And now that you have reached this high rank, the rank of being a martyr in the way of Allah, we ask you to pray for us so that we can live and die like you. A life and death full of purity and honor.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of The Teacher, which was about the great martyr of Islam, Shahid Haj Qasem Soleimani. Please don't forget to log on to our website, which is www.parstoday.com. And if you have any questions or suggestions, send an email to englishradio@irib.ir. Until next time, we leave you in Allah's care.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Israeli settler attacks against Palestinians are a normal reality in villages around Nablus, threatening everyone's lives. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of the Electronic Intifada wrote, Ahmad Dawabish does not like to look back. He has good reason. The 12-year-old survived one of the worst settler attacks in recent years when his family's home in the village of Duma in the occupied West Bank district of Nablus was firebombed by Israeli settlers in 2015. Ahmad's 18-month-old brother Ali was burned to death. His father, Saad, died a week later from his injuries. Riham, Ahmad's mother, died a month after that. Ahmad was 4 at the time. He sustained severe burns all over his body, and the attack still cast a dark shadow over life in the village. According to Nasser Dawabish, 48, the uncle who is now raising Ahmad, relations between the villagers in Duma and the Israeli settlers surrounding them have only gotten worse. And since 2015, the village has been attacked at least a dozen more times. As for Ahmad, he's trying to put it behind him. The attack doesn't affect me anymore because I don't allow myself to think about it, Ahmad told the Electronic Intifada, sitting on a sofa chair in his uncle's home. He attempts to twirl a football in between his fingers, catching it before it falls on the ground. Ahmad still has burn scars across the right side of his face and across his body. He has had years of reconstructive surgery and skin grafts, and his treatment is far from over. Every 6 months, he must undergo laser skin treatment for the scars, along with hair restoration surgeries and more skin grafts. The family receives special military permission to access this treatment at an Israeli regime hospital. We don't feel happy going there inside the occupied territories, Nasser said, adding, but it is only Israeli hospital that has the medical equipment, so we have no other choice. As tensions soar across the occupied West Bank, the United Nations finding that 2022 has been the deadliest year for Palestinians in the West Bank since it started counting fatalities in 2005, the Dawabish family is left to fend for themselves. Nasser told the Electronic Intifada, "We are terrified something like this could happen again. There is no authority here that can protect us from them. We only have God." The Dawabish family's home still stands as it was, blackened with ash and dotted with Ahmad's parents' blankets and belongings in the room where they sustained the burns that would eventually kill them. On one of the walls, someone has scribbled, "We will never forgive." We decided to leave the home this way to act as a proof and testament to the violence Israeli settlers have inflicted on us, Nasser said. The ringleader of the attack was then 21-year-old Amiram Ben Oleil, who was at the time living in a bus in the Odei Ad settlement outpost, which overlooks Duma. He was allegedly part of the Hilltop Youth, an extremist and nationalist group of Israeli settlers who agitate for a Jewish theocracy from which Gentiles, non-Jews, are expelled. While all Israeli settlements in the Palestinian territory are considered illegal under international law, the Zionist regime only considers outposts illegal. It nonetheless provides them with state-funded protection and access to water and electricity. They're often retroactively legalized, and the new Israeli coalition regime has reportedly pledged to confer legal status on all remaining outposts in its first 60 days in power. The Hilltop Youth are fiercely anti-Palestinian. They are accused of being behind the so-called price tag attacks in which settlers target Palestinians and their properties in revenge for outposts being demolished by the Zionist regime's military. Ben Oleil was represented by the lawyer Itamar Ben-Gvir, now the ultra-right leader of the Otzma Yehudit, who is set to become National Security Minister, a newly created position in Benjamin Netanyahu's latest and most extreme coalition regime. According to prosecutors, Ben Oleil began his journey that night from Yeshuv Hadat, a nearby settlement outpost. He staked out homes in Duma to attack, first throwing a Molotov cocktail into an empty house. He then moved on to Dawabish family's home. One Molotov was thrown through the Dawabish bedroom window while the family was asleep. Ben Oleil also sprays painted revenge on the outside of the home before the attack. The indictment claims that Ben Oleil acted alone in the attack with one unidentified suspect, who was a minor at the time, striking a plea deal that saw him convicted only as an accessory. However, eyewitnesses claim that they saw at least two masked men fleeing from the scene that night. In 2020, an Israeli regime court issued a triple life sentence against Ben Oleil, who had been convicted on 3 counts of murder and 2 counts of attempt murder. The Shin Bet, an Israeli regime spying agency at the time, said the ruling was an important milestone in the battle against Jewish terror. But the rare sentencing of a Jewish settler for crimes committed against Palestinians has done little to comfort the Dawabish family. Nasser said it wasn't enough. Standing outside the charred remains of the family's home, adding, "It will never bring back the dead, and it wasn't the act of one person. If it wasn't for the government and army supporting these settlers, then they would never have come to burn our family alive. It is the Zionist regime and the occupation itself that should be on trial," Nasser said. "Not just one settler," he said. The court had also fined Ben Oleil just under $75,000, which was to be given as compensation to Ahmad. Nasser says the family has still not received any money. Nasser told the Electronic Intifada, "These settlers are still attacking us, and they are still taking our land. Nothing has changed." Just a week after Ahmad's family was targeted in an arson attack, another Palestinian family's home near Douma was also attacked with Molotov cocktails. No injuries were reported in that attack. Nablus in particular has seen a sharp increase in coordinated and armed settler attacks over the past few months under Israeli regime army protection. This is due in part to Palestinian resistance operation against the Zionist regime troops and Zionist settlers in Nablus and other West Bank cities, as well as the arrival of the annual olive harvest season, in which many Palestinians are permitted to access their lands near Israeli settlements and outposts, and which is often accompanied by a spike in settler assaults. According to the UN, there have been nearly 800 settler attacks against Palestinians and their property in 2022. At least 175 Palestinians have been killed by the Israeli regime army in the West Bank and Gaza during 2022. Douma has had its share of this increase in settler violence. On June 16, 2022, a car near Douma was set on fire by settlers armed with metal batons. They smashed the car's windshield and a side window and pepper sprayed the two men inside. On the same day, a couple with their 3-year-old daughter and 1-month-old infant were also attacked by Israeli settlers who were standing beside an Israeli regime military jeep. The settlers kicked their car, smashed one of the windows and a front headlight with a baton, and pepper sprayed the couple and their babies.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.